davening, holding a sefer tovah, etc. Let me just sort of summarize some of the points that we made, because it will come up later in the future discussion. The consensus of Poskim is that there is no source whatsoever to prohibit netis, no halachic source whatsoever to prohibit nidot from davening, touching a sefer Torah, etc. It should be absolutely clear that if a woman is not a nidah, right, which is, as we've demonstrated, 80% of a woman at any one time, there is absolutely no question whatsoever that there is no prohibition for a woman to touch a sefer Torah. We're talking about specific cases where a woman is a menstruant, and when there's a question, and whether there is an issue, and the proposed can say that there is absolutely no halachic source for a woman to prohibit a woman from davening or saying God's name or touching a sefer Torah when she's a menstruant. Nevertheless, the Ramah does quote a custom, and the Ramah is merely, he's in the 1500s, but he's quoting resource sources going back quite early, that quote the custom that women don't daven or say brachot or go to shul while they're menstruating. He also mentions that the custom only applied during the days the woman is actually having her flow. So it's very clear from that point right away that this has nothing to do with tumat nida or the concept of halacha, some halacha concept of tumah and tara, because as everyone knows, those apply to a woman who's going to the mikveh. So the fact that the prohibition or this custom, the custom of the women not to do many things, religious actions, was only during the 5 day, 4 or 5 days that she's actually menstruating, that this is some other concept. The poskim challenged the custom that the woman had of not davening or saying brachot on the grounds that a minig that has no halachic source can't contravene an obligation, a clear obligation. So, by that matter, if a woman has to bench or light candles or daven, etc., etc., a custom that has no source, certainly, even if it's of the greatest intention, even though women are viewed as an act of sanctification, their motivation is wonderful, it can't contravene an obligation that these women have. The Mishnah Berurah, who's talking at Greek, wrote his book, he lived in the 1930s, but he actually wrote his Mishnah work in the late 1800s, writes that our women go to shul and do everything, though that he mentions a custom of not looking at the writing of the Sefer Torah when it was raised for Chuppah. And this latter custom, if you go to the modern period, we quoted, you mentioned the name of Yoshim, Moshe Feinstein, Zetzal, and Rabbi Jacobowitz from and his London Beis Din, that they all say that there is no such custom. But the custom was made invalid until the late 1800s, but this custom is no longer valid. Okay. As I mentioned, the custom only affected those women who were actually menstruating, and it seems to be totally detached from the concept of tumat nidah. It seems to be more related to the fact that it has to do with feminine hygiene. The women just simply felt dirty, and they were sensitive about possible abstaining and of odors and the like, and therefore that's what kept away from shul, and it developed into a general concept of impurity, which, although it has no halachah, it sort of developed, it sort of started snowballing to extend to other things. I'd like to mention that Rav Avadi Yosef was asked the question if there was any problem for a woman who was needed to go to the Kotel, to touch the Kotel. And he said there's absolutely no problem. So, and he said this was the custom for generations, and even though we were Muslims, they went to the Kotel, touch the Kotel, didn't work. Now, you have to understand that the Kotel has a Dinbei Knesset. And to say like this, there's sort of kedusha to the Kotel itself. There are those who are strict of not putting things into the Kotel. They hold the question is where you hold the baby in the shtar, and some of the things the Kotel is. I don't know. Now, we're going to now begin our discussion of women wearing talit and tefillin. Okay, we're going to begin with women wearing tefillin, the question of women wearing tefillin. I should make point out that it's not surprise, should not be surprising to you that in the discussion of women wearing tefillin, the question of a woman being a nida somehow does come in, but it comes in from a side consideration. The fact that a woman is a nida per se, okay, that a woman, for instance, an unmarried woman hasn't gone to the mikveh, that doesn't bother any of the poskim. Again, the problem may have to do with the flow per se, but you have to see this in the sources, and again, it will become very clear that this is not a tuma concept of nida, but a cleanliness concept of nida. Okay? And we'll go and discuss this a few minutes later. Now, before we get into the question of nida of tefillin, I have to tell you one unique quality about tefillin. Tefillin requires what is called a guf naki. How the poskim learn out? They learn out from Elisha Balak Nafayim. Elisha Balak Nafayim was called Elisha, the man of the wings. Now, the way he got his name was that it seemed that the Romans at a particular period said that Jews wore tefillin all the time. It was like, you know, they got dressed, they put on tefillin, the males put on tefillin, and they wore it to work, or if it didn't interfere, they wore it all day long. And the Romans at a particular time prohibited Jews from wearing tefillin. The story is that Elisha Baal Kinafayim, that one of these spirits was wearing tefillin, one of the Roman soldiers saw him and ran after him. As he's running, he's taking off his tefillin, and they wore very small tefillin, they would, and he put his tefillin in his hands. And the Gemara says that the soldier asked him, "What do you have in your hands?" And he says, "I have a dove." And sure. From that time on, he was called the Baal Kinafayim. Now, the Gemara later says that anybody who's not like Elisha ben Baal Kinafayim, who can maintain himself in cleanliness, have a guf naki, should not wear tefillin. The Gemara then later, Rav and Abaye had a discussion. What does it mean that you have to have cleanliness? Because Elisha Baal Kinafayim was obviously very, very special. I mean, God was doing miracles for him. So, I mean, you'd say that nobody, if you're not like Elisha Baal Kinafayim, you can't wear tefillin. He's a bishop of tefillin. So Rav and Abaye obviously knew that was an exaggeration, but it was said, just simply saying, we're going to have to define what this guf naki is. And as the halacha understands it, it means that one is not allowed to have flatulence and not to pass gas while he's wearing tefillin, or need to move his bowels, or it also extends to cleanliness of thought, that you can't be distracted, you have to be aware that you're wearing the tefillin, you have to maintain the sanctity of thought. You can't have kalid rosh, which is levity. It doesn't mean that you can't be happy. I think there's a very important distinction. There's a very fine line in the halacha between simcha and tzchok, or simcha and kalut rosh. Okay, one is happiness, joy, the fact that you have simcha Torah, when you're dancing with the Sefer Torah. The other type of joy, which is called holah, or tzchok, when you throw water at the bar chazan, which is mashe baruch amur degesh. The halacha wants happiness, it doesn't want tzchok, or it doesn't want holah, it doesn't want kalut rosh, like I said. Now, eventually, you have to understand that there was a very interesting phenomenon. There was a tshuva written to one of the Gaonim. I'm sorry. It's a very famous tshuva, where I think it was Rav Haigel. He was asked, "Are we allowed to wear tefillin?" Very strange, right? You're talking about the Gaonim around 900,000, and they're asking, is it permissible to wear tefillin? Now, it seems very clear that there was a period that people felt that they couldn't maintain themselves the sanctity, cleanliness of body, cleanliness of thought, and people see that it's not their fault. And when I go to Hollis and Springs, it says, I wear food. You have to be worried about concentration and not being distracted, so he says, don't wear it all day long. When they daven in the morning, when they say Kriyat Shema, Shemona Esrei, put on the tefillin just before and maintain your thought, maintain the cleanliness of the body for that short period of time, half an hour, 45 minutes, maintain the cleanliness of thought. And that's how it's actually brought in Shulchan Aruch. It's brought in Shulchan Aruch that even though fundamentally the mitzvah of tefillin is to be worn all day long, nevertheless, we do not wear tefillin all day long. We wear tefillin, those who wear tefillin, men who wear tefillin, put them on just before davening and take them off immediately after and don't wear it for the rest of the day. And that is sort of a compromise between the tension of the requirement to have guf naki and dat nikiya and the obligation, right, which we say we're not up to doing it all day long, and the biblical obligation to put on tefillin. So that's the tension that's involved. This tension is extremely relevant, as you will see, for the question of the. But if you look in Shulchan Aruch, that's what it says. It says even the obligation is all day long, I mean, you can wear it for all day long. You only do the minimal, which is during Shulchan Aruch, or on some days we don't wear like Tisha B'Av, then the obligation is deferred to Mincha time. There are those who are noted for the Rosh Yeshiva or sitting at the Beis Medrash all day long. There are some people who are Machmir, they wear for a little bit longer than they wear for the Chatzal, etc. What I think we ought to do now, what we're going to do now is, I want you to, let's review a little bit about it, the Seishas Mangana, because you're going to see that why Talis and Tefillin are exceptional. Why are they exceptional? So open up the books to page 50. Open the book to page 50, and let's review about women, about the whole question of women fulfilling positive commandments, which are time to turn. Okay? So on page 50, let's read source number. Aleph, Daber el b'nei Yisrael. Page 50, source, at the bottom of the page. That's in the main section. That's source of Aleph. This is the Safron, also appears in Gemara Chagiga. Daber el b'nei Yisrael v'amata aleihem. Adam ki yakid mikem, v'samach yado al rosh hashanah. When you bring a korban, what are the mitzvot? It's mitzvah smicha. Smicha means you put your weight on the korban. The Gemara says, Daber al b'nei Yisrael. So the Gemara learns after this, first line of page 51, b'nei Yisrael samachim v'in b'not Yisrael samachim. That the obligation of smicha is on males, and not on female. Now, there are times that B'nai Yisrael is B'nai Yisrael below Akum, non-Jews, B'nai Yisrael is B'nai below Abadim. How the darshan each pasuk is an asola. The Malbim in his commentary attempts at great length to try to understand what was in the text that led Chazal to know what to exclude, but at least they had a tradition there that the males are obligated to lean, women are not obligated, they don't have the obligation to lean. So Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon on the name, let's hear Rabbi Shimon say, Hanashim Samchot Vishut. So while the women are not obligated, they can nevertheless do it. They can do it if they want to lean on their korban, they're allowed to do so. Okay. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Amar the Abba Eliezer. Rabbi Yossi said, Rabbi Abba Eliezer the Kohen told me, Hayal Lanu Egel Zivche Shlamim. We had this cat, which was a korban shlamim, which is a korban which a person brings and part goes to the kohen, part goes to the mizbeach, the majority goes to the person who brings the korban. Votzeinu lezrat nashim, and we took it out to the ezrat nashim, the women's section. The samchu alav nashim, the women leaned on their korban for the sacrifice. Lo mipnei shasimcha b'nashim, not because smicha is an obligation by women. They wanted to do it. They did it because they wanted to do it. So they could do it. So it's clear here, this is one of the first sources where even though women are not obligated in some of the mitzvah, they're not excluded from the mitzvah, they can do the mitzvah. This is one of the first sources. You probably say, why not? Why should be the problem? Well, it's not a trivial problem. Because in this particular case, you're not allowed to lean on the korban. It's called avodah b'korbanot. There's a whole discussion here, which I don't want to get into. You're not allowed to lean on a korban that unnecessarily. You're getting, essentially getting pleasure or using a korban improperly. So that we might be afraid that the women are doing melacha b'korbanot. So we learn here that they don't. The Gemara then goes into great length and say they don't do a full smicha, they do a partial smicha, they don't put the all right, but they do put their hands on the korban. And even though we might have been afraid of some rabbinic prohibition here, the rabbi said, no, we don't worry about it, we let the women do smicha. But this is, again, this is one particular example where the rabbis were permissive, because they wanted to give the women spiritual pleasure. It's a very important guideline. I must tell you that I don't know how many of you follow halakhic feminist literature. I do, day in and day out. And one of the tensions in the discussion between halakhicists and halakhic feminists is how far does nachat ruach l'nashim go? I mean, how much does it set aside? Because it would seem here, the question here, how much did the rabbi set aside by permitting this nachat ruach? Okay? The answer is not trivial. From the analysis of the majority of Rishonim is that if the women fulfill a commandment, if there is what's called kiyum hamitzvah, a great deal can be set aside. The view of the rabbi is that a woman who wants to wear tzitzis, we'll talk about tzitzis later, can do so and even wear shabbos, because she has a kima mitzvah. We talk about it, when we get to tzitzis, I'm trying to say that the question, there's a lot to do about what happens when a woman fulfills a mitzvah that she's not obligated to. The rabbit holds she gets full mitzvah once. She's doing a mitzvah. If she's doing a mitzvah, she can even set aside shabbos, which is a biblical prohibition. Can set aside within the prohibitions? The answer is yes, because a woman who wants, it's also to blow shofar, right? On Yom, you can't stop blow shofar. You can't blow shofar, it's rabbinically forbidden. Yet a woman who's not obligated to shofar, who wants to blow shofar on Yom Kippur, on Rosh Hashanah, can do so. How? The answer is because her kiyum hamitzvah sets aside the rabbinic prohibition of not blowing shofar on Yom Kippur. For her. Not only that, man can blow shofar. There's all question, can a man blow shofar? Can a man do blow shofar? Tzvi Maskin does it all the time. Right? Men can even blow shofar for women. So, and certainly women can blow shofar, they can also blow for themselves. That's because their kiyum ha-mitzvah, their nachat ruach, when they get a kiyum ha-mitzvah, when they're fulfilling it, can set aside certain of the prohibitions. Yes, you look astounded.
No, I didn't. Because I didn't know you were not allowed to
blow shofar. Yeah. It's called clay shear. But it's a cold question. What's about what? That's correct. But if I want to go around and just go...
Oh, not with
the
Yom
HaMitzvah. Right. A woman... Right. Somebody wants to get up and start playing with the shofar. There's all discussion to prevent kids from blowing shofar. Can little kids, you prevent your kids from blowing shofar. They want to play around with the shofar. That's a discussion. Look at Mara, I don't want to go. But a woman who picks up in a shofar, why can she do it? Why sets aside the rabbinic prohibition? It's just her kiyum mitzvah. So there's a question in analyzing this nachat ruach argument, it has to do, is the question is, what is set aside in prohibitions? Is it the nachat ruach that set aside in prohibitions? Or is it the kiyum mitzvah that's setting aside the prohibitions? This is not a trivial problem. Yes. Yes.
Sure.
For herself. Yes.
And a woman and a man cannot blow the shofar for dinner.
That's correct.
And a woman can?
No.
That's what
you said. She agrees. I said it's the same rules, but yeah. The fact that she's doing a kima mitzvah is what's setting aside the rabbinic prohibition. Even though she's not obligated. think if I'm not obligated, I can't blow shofar. She's not obligated. She's not obligated. So don't. It's rabbinically prohibited. It's prohibited. So don't blow shofar. Okay. I'm just giving guesses.
A man can't practice a man can't
blow
shofar.
No. In fact, there's all the shofar blowers have this thing about warming up. They really do. I was talking to Flynn, you know, he's a trumpet. So he says the blow shofar thing. And he says his friends, they all go to the Moshe Skanim early in the morning to blow shofar and warm up. But they're blowing for people. And then he comes to the shul, you know, all his chaver, all his egos involved, and he's all warmed up. Okay. Those are some of the tricks of the trade. Okay, now, next, let's go back, okay? Ein ma'akvin, okay, now we get to shofar. Ein ma'akvin et ha'tinokot militkoa. We don't prevent little kids from blowing shofar. Avon mit askim imahem achiyumidu. But you try to direct them to blow shofar properly. That doesn't grow up. I don't want to do it. Verse says, little children, you don't do it because they're kids. You don't stop. Ha nashim makvin. But women, you do stop. Ha nashim makvin. It's a, you know, that you do stop them. And so it's like an exclamation, it's a question. Vatanya ein makvin lo at the nashim, but lo at the nitinokot mitko abiyotov. You don't prevent neither children nor women from blowing shofar on yotov. Am rabbaye lo kasha. No problem. Ha rab Yehuda, that's a view of Rab Yehuda. Rab Yossi and Rab Shimon. One is, that's the view of Rab Yehuda, who says it's prohibitive. And the other was the view of Rab Yossi and Rab Shimon, which is permissive. The Tanya, for we learned. B'nei Yisrael somchim, v'ein b'not Yisrael somchim. B'nei Yisrael can lean, but the daughter of Israel can't lean. So saith Divrei Rab Yehuda. That's the view of Rab Yehuda. So Rab Yehuda holds, if you're not obligated, you can't go ahead and set aside rabbinic prohibitions. That's his view. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon says, no, Nashim, Samchot, Rishon, Rishon can do it, and by shofar too, they can do it. Okay? So that's the general entree into the whole question of women doing mitzvah that they're not obligated. The answer is yes. Okay. Now, we're going to talk about that. And we'll see that there are exceptions for different reasons. Okay, now turn to page 61. Actually, page 59. At the bottom of the page. Now, so we have smicha and kiyat shofar, two examples. Women not obligated, yet they can do. Next example. Bottom of the page. Mechilta, this is Mishnaic literature, if you remember, Tanaitic literature written, but organized not about on the Mishnah, but organized on the Chumash. And the Mechilta, by the question of tefillin, which is mentioned in Shmot, says as follows. Michal bat kushi. Okay? Shol was referred to as Cushi. They said because he was very dark in complexion. Anyway, Michal bat Cushi haita manachet. She used to wear a tefillin. Ishto shel Yonah haita olat l'begalim. She would go up to the shul shel begalim, even though the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel is an obligation. Yireh kol schucha. At Bnei Hashem Lechem. The Torah says explicitly that if the males have an obligation, they come to the Beit HaMikdash and bring a korban re'iyah v'lo yaru panai v'kam. Nevertheless, the wife of Yonah would make it her business to come to the Beit HaMikdash with a korban, because you can't go to Yerushalayim, there's no. But she would make it her business to go to Yerushalayim and she'd bring a korban re'iyah or whatever she did. Tavi. Avdoshana Begamliel Hayamaniyah Tfilin. Tavi, who was the slave of Rabbi Gamliel, and Tavi was what was well known for being extremely scrupulous about the fulfillment of mitzvot. Hello? He was between the scriptures, we know that, I'm sorry, you're, we know that he was a non-Jewish slave to a Jew, and non-Jewish slaves to Jews don't have Kedusha Israel, but they do have some obligations, many of them like women, and therefore he's also Patur from Tchum, but he was very careful to make sure. The verse is that he used to work on, very careful to make sure. And to the point that he was such a tzaddik that the Mishnah mentions that when Rabbi Gamliel, when he passed away, Rabbi Gamliel sat shiva. What? He was a slave. Let's not get into a discussion about Judaism and slavery.
The Lebanese,
the Nation of the Lord. I don't know. I don't remember that it was. There is a story that he was released for Kriyat HaTorah. Maybe that's Shkred Abdo. Okay, I have to remember this. Okay. In any case, he works for it. So he saw, what do we see here? See it clearly that Michal bat Shaul were a fully. And you also see that the wife of Yona went up on the regular. Okay. That's not good for Mar Yerushalmi. Okay. Mar says, Taman Tanim, you learned that. Next one. Nashim, this is the Mar Yerushalmi. Nashim Vavadim Turin Mikriyachma Umanatfuli. The Mar Brachot, it says that women are free both from Kriyatma, which is a mitzvah of Seshaz Mankama, and from tefillin, which you don't wear at night, nor do you wear it on Shabbat in Yom Kippur, so it's a mitzvah, it's a time to drink mitzvah. The Gemara says, Hatibun, is that possible? What do you mean that women don't wear tefillin? Harei Michal bat Kushi haita lo veshet tefillin. You saw that she did wear tefillin. Vishto shal yona haita ola lo vevdalim, vel lo michu biyadei chachamim. Now notice the added words here. That she wore tefillin, okay, that Michal bat Shaul wore tefillin, and the wife of Yonah went up for a regal, the lo michu biyadei chachamim, and chachamim did not object. Chizkiya b'shem ha-Biblia, though, says, not so. Ishto shel Yonah hushba. Okay, there are several ways of reading it. Either hushava, she was turned back. That means they told her, don't do it. Go back up. Okay, hushba, hushava. Or hushba means she was taken into captivity as a punishment for existing. That's another possibility of interpretation. But never possible. Hushava means hushava. Michal bat kushi, michal biyadei chachamim. That's not so. Your tradition is wrong. They did object to wearing for that's what Chizkiya, and that's the Yerushalmi, the Babylonian, that's the Jerusalem Talmud, has the tradition that they did object. Essentially, the thrust of the Gemara Yerushalmi would seem to be that women who are not obligated cannot do the mitzvah if they're not obligated.
Notice that they had no problems with Tami.
Tami?
It's supposed to be the same
thing. Tami is the Mechilta. It's not been discussed in Yerushalmi. Now, let me hold your question, and I'll come back to it. I'll come back to it in a second. Yeah.
So, I'm not sure how they did it. Are the
difference
between
it's about
where there's a downside from the upside, like
slave for life? Excellent. Just hold on. Let's go to the last question. You're raising. If I don't mention it in 3 minutes, it'll last me. So the Gemara Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, has a different tradition. Let's read the Babylonian Talmud. Tanya. Michal bat Kushi, haitam benachat tefillin. Okay, the same Gemara, the same writer, Michal bat Kushi wore tefillin, v'lo michu b'yachachamim. V'ishto sheyena haita ola l'regulim, v'lo michu b'chachamim. That's the Babylonian tradition. The Gemara says, Alma Kasavre, the Gemara then says, well, what can we learn from this? One possibility we can learn from this is mitzvah tasei shaloa zman gramani, that it's a positive command which are not fine in children. Why didn't Michal bat Shaul wear tefillin? Because maybe she held that she was obligated. She held that there was a positive command which is not time determined. Okay? The Gemara says no. Because the Gemara is here trying to determine what the status of the Tefillin is. Is it Pasuk or not? Which is time determined? Which is not time determined? The Gemara says, maybe we'll learn from here that Tefillin is a Pasuk or not, which is not time determined, and we're not obligated. And that's what Michal Bat Shaul, that's why she put on Tefillin. The Dilma, but there's a lot of problems with that supposition. Because, excuse me, if she's obligated, why? What does the Gemara say? No, Michal, they didn't object. She's not obligated. Why would you ever think that she objects? Second of all, that's all right if you want to, the Michal Bat Shaul, but Aliyah L'Regel, everybody is in its association. Only comes three times a year. Well, how, where would you have a Havamina, a thought, that it's not a Pasuk of Mahashem? Let's continue through, because the Gemara's answer is the other answer. The Gemara says, no, the Dilma, Savulak Rav Yossi. Now, maybe they held, maybe Michal Bat Shaul and the Chachamim that didn't object, held like Rav Yossi. The Amar, Nashim Samchot Rishut. Women do smicha voluntarily, even though they're obligated. Dilo Temahachi, because if you don't say that, Ishto Shalyona, Ita Ola Lareda, Velo Michuba. The word says that the wife of Yonah went to Aliyah Lareda, Miika Mamanda Marego Lab, Mitzah Tessation, Mamanda, Gama, is there something you hold that you're not, that it's not a positive, get out of time, it's better. Elakasara Rishut, it's clear they hold the Rishut. So how does the Gemara conclude here? The Bavli. The Bavli comes up with the conclusion that, in fact, she worked Tefillin and she committed Tefillin. It was a Rishut. The Lomichu Biyaba Chachami. The Chachami didn't object. Okay? Now, if you look at it, essentially, if you look at it, on the top of it, it's the source make is a very, very clear demand that the Gemara is following. There's no problem. It's true, the Rishonim comes to the conclusion that so. Rishon says, no, according to Chizkiya, the women can't work for it. We don't even know why they object. It seems to be a general objection. It seems to be a general objection. The women, because he also, remember, Chizkiya also said that Ishto Shayono Hu Shabbat, which means that even for Aliyah L'Regel, which is a clearly innocuous, seems to be innocuous mitzvah, she was turned back. Right? She was told not to go. So it seems to be a general principle according to Yerushalmi. They hold, seems like Yerushalmi holds like Rabbi Yehuda, that women who have options that are not obligated can't do those mitzvahs. Now, when we attempted to understand the two schools, there was a school of Yehuda.
What can't do if they're over something else?
That is a very, when we discussed this the very first time around, we dealt with that. We saw one was Rashi. Rashi's view was that the view that says a woman, or they're not obligated, they can't do a mitzvah, Rashi held the view that it's not possible. If God gave you a certain number of mitzvah, you're not allowed to add to the mitzvah. And anybody who does a mitzvah, they're not obligated, forbidden because it's Bob Dosted. You're adding to God's commandments. A man is obligated to cut the Kach commandments. He can't add to those. A woman's obligated to cut and she can't add to hers. That would be Rabbi Yehuda. You and Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yosef. Oh no! God gave us a certain number of commandments. Women were freed from these commandments, but it's not that they were totally free. They were given an exemption. They were given an option. They want to, they can do it. You're not adding the mitzvah. What is Baal Tosef, says Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yosef? Rabbi Yosef means adding the 614th mitzvah. I'm not adding a new mitzvah. I'm just opting to fulfill it. I'm not adding an extra mitzvah. The other approach to the prohibitive school was the school that we saw in Tosfot. Okay, look at this top page 61. Okay, Tosfot. Tosfot is an interpreting Rabbi Yehuda. The prohibitive school, middle of Farish, it would seem to me, the Tamam, the Mandama, the Lohavi Rishut, that the reason, the view that holds that if women are exempted, they cannot fulfill, they're forbidden, it's because we're talking about four specific mitzvot. We're not talking in general, we're talking about four specific mitzvot. Aviyah L'Regel, Tefillin, Smicha, and shofar. Because in these four mitzvahs, there is a downside. What is the downside? Let's see. Let's try to get nearer the furish. The tama, the man, the amal, the loha, the reshut, mishum the tefillin tzricha guf naki. Because tefillin needs a clean body. V'nashim ein zrizot izayah. Women are not careful to be, are not scrupulous about keeping a clean body. Hold on for a second. Trust me that I read the source with astonishment too. Okay? Source number one. So he says, what is the downside? The downside is that tefillin needs a clean body, and that the women are not careful about a clean body. Or they won't be careful about a clean body. They won't be scrupulous to be careful about a clean body. V'aliyah l'regel. What's the downside of the regel? Mishum demesek neviyah chul azavah. Because it looks like she's bringing to the Beit HaMikdash a korban, which is bringing an animal, which is not a korban. You can't stomp from the Beit HaMikdash with an animal. When you come to the Beit HaMikdash, the animal you come in with has to be for a korban. And she's not obligated. It looks like she's bringing a non-obligatory animal. She is bringing a non-obligatory animal. But it looks like a stam animal to the Beit HaMikdash. Chulin Lazara. O mishum riyat panim bazara shalom. So, it's coming to see God's presence unnecessarily. Without there's a problem of too much familiarity with God. So there's no, it would seem that it's unnecessary. Now, clearly we'll talk about the other view. We're talking about the view that says that women can't do these four mitzvot. Okay? Now what about smicha? Smicha's also, because you come to putting your weight in a korban. And kiyat shofar is the rabbinic prohibition of blowing shofar. So Tosis wants to say that Rabbi Yehuda, the prohibited school, that it's not prohibiting all the fulfillment, because in all the other mitzvot, there's no downside. He's talking about the four mitzvahs that are talked about in Gemara, specifically says there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. It's only in the machlokas, it's only in these four mitzvahs. Smicha, shofar, aliyah l'regel, and tefillah. That's one view. Rashi says no. It's a general machlokas, whether women can ever fulfill a mitzvah or not. Okay, so let's now see what's the bottom line. The bottom line, halachically, is that women can fulfill any positive commandment, which is passing the Yossi, we're passing the and like the children, and that seems to be the bottom line. We're passing that women can fulfill Russian somchot b'shut, that a woman can blow a shofar, a woman can make aliyah l'regel, a woman can wear tefillin. That's the bottom line. That's how we pass it. We pass like the Bavli. The Gemara Bavli says a what? The Michal Bachol, right, word filling below Michal Bachacham. True, there are dissenting opinions. There's an opinion in Yerushalmi. But when it's a machlok between the Bavli and Yerushalmi, we paskin at the Bavli. And it's very clear from all the Rishonim that if it's the machlok between Rabbi Yossi, who's permissive about women fulfilling the obligated commandments, and Rabbi Yehuda, who's against it, you pass it to Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yossi. They permitted it. So that would seem to be open and shut case. Women can wear a towel and pull it off. Like, if that were the case, I wouldn't be standing here tonight, because obviously it continues on. Because there are very few of us who are acquainted with women who wear tefillin. And when women do wear tefillin, it makes the front page of the Jerusalem Report. So it's something that we have to analyze, because from the sources that we read now, there doesn't mean a problem. Well, next tonight and the next week, we're going to see what the problem is. Okay. Now, something that we have to talk about is what this means. It's mentioned, but it's going to come back to haunt us. When the Tosfos says, you know why Rabbi Yehuda objected to women wearing tefillin? Because women aren't careful about a clean body. And you have to use
punish.
I know it. Third. Okay, and you're going to see it's going to come back to haunt us. So we're going to have to struggle with this head on. But we're going to have to understand, but when Tosfos says that we, people over because we don't paskin that way, right? We don't paskin the Magen Rabbi Yehuda, so it really doesn't bother me what it means. Okay, let's now, we're going to start historically. We're going to sort of go through some of the codes and see what they have to say. Okay, on the handout, everybody with me, from this handout. And one of the first, okay, maybe you can close the book, we're not going to need the book for a moment. Well, yeah. Let's now look, okay, Tefillin Heter Gamul Aniyah. I mean, we're going to see a bunch of the earlier codes in the 1200s and early 1300s. We'll see there's no problem with women wearing Tefillin. Okay, let's read the Rambam. The Rambam says, V'chein sha'ar mitzvot esay shehanashim k'tuvot behen im ratzu lasot otan v'lo bracha ein mochim b'yadam. What does the Rambam say? If the woman, if a woman, v'chein sha'ar, the Rambam was talking about tzitzit, and the Rambam says, not only tzitzit, but any mitzvot esay shazman grama, which women are free from, if they want to do it without a bracha. Okay, remember, this is the Rambam's view. We had a discussion about this at great length. The Rambam and the Sephardi school is of the opinion that women, if they're not obligated, they can do the mitzvah, but they can't make the bracha. They can't say, Ashik Shalom mitzvah tam mitzvah. And the Ashkenazi school says, you may not be, they're not, that they don't, they, that, what is the word, that they can do the mitzvah, and they can make the bracha if they like. What it says, Vitzivanu, the word Vitzivanu doesn't mean they were, you're out of commanded, it means that we were, Klal Yisrael was given the commandment. And women have the option to do it. Proof is that they get a key of the mitzvah, that if they do it, they get schar, they get reward. So they're not excluded from the mitzvah, they're just sort of given an option to do it if they like. They're part of the mitzvah. So Vitzivanu means we're part of Klal Yisrael to get this mitzvah. Okay, so the Rambam holds, there's no difference. And notice the Rambam used the exact same language as written by Tefillin. He uses it by every mitzvah that says Shazman Gama. The Rambam says Tefillin, sitting in the sukkah, shaking lulav. Every mitzvah that says Shazman Gama. No problem. Let's look at the Chinuch. The Rambam died in the early 1200s. The Chinuch is in the early 1300s. Okay, actually, he passed away in the 1300. What does the Chinuch say? But now, Hagid Mitzvah Zu, okay? We're talking about here, about Tefillin. This mitzvah, says the Chinuch, applies, but now Hagid Mitzvah Zu, b'chol makom, u'b'chol zman, b'scharim, avodot b'nekedot. That males are obligated to Tefillin, but not females. L'fishi mitzvah tasei shazman v'ma, because it's a positive commandment, which is fine to join. U'mikol makom, im ratzu lahaniach, who would want to put on Tefillin, in the machen b'yadon, the schar yishlem, and they have reward. I'm a locus schar yish, but not because we like the reward of a male. She'eino domes schar ha-metzuleh v'ose, k'schar she'eino metzuleh v'ose. This is a general principle, which we also discussed at length, that one who is obligated and fulfills gets greater reward than one who is not obligated yet fulfills. And the variety of psychological rationales. Umasechet Erevin, the Resh Per Kamotzi film, the beginning of Masechet Erevin, Amru Zichonam Levecha, a Chazal told, said to us, Shemichal Bat Shaul Haitam Anachat Tfilin, the Lomi Kubi Anach Chamin. Right? She put on Tfilin, the rabbis didn't object. The Shemra, they also said there, Ishto Shayono Haitam Levecha, the Lomi Kubi Anach Chamin, and the rabbis didn't object. The Rashba, who was such a contemporary, who died in the year 1310, says, Hiskamti kidivrei mi sh'omer shimratzu osot kol mitzvat asei u'mevochot. I came to the conclusion, says the Rashba. One of the Rashba is one of the major pillars of Psaki. He wrote thousands of tshuvot. The Rashba writes that, Rav Shimon ben Aderet, he writes that, I came to the conclusion that women can do all mitzvot asei shazman grama and make a bracha. How do I know? Mimasa de Michal Bat Shaul, from the story of Michal Bat Shaul, Sheikam and Achat Filin, the Lo Michubiyada, they didn't object. Ela Kiritzon Chachamim Abda. Notice, okay, that she did as the rabbis will. Who stomach the milta, kiva de Menachan, and it makes logical sense that if she put on Filin, she made a blood. Now, I want you to see something of the Rashba did here. Rashba says, and this is going to be, just be sensitive. How do you understand? The rabbis didn't object. The rabbis happier. One could readily say, no, they rabbis were. They were happy. But they didn't object. They couldn't object. Right? Because she was within her legal rights to go ahead and do it. I just want you to feel a growing tension. I want you to see that things are not as simple as they would seem at first glance. Lo michu biyada chachamim could well mean the rabbis weren't happy about it, but they didn't say no. They didn't object. They didn't object because she had nachat ruach from it. She was careful with all the rules. The rabbis didn't object. The Rashba doesn't read it, clearly doesn't read it that way. How does the Rashba say? Ela vitzom chachamin avda. The rabbis encouraged her. Lo michu biyada chachamin. It's the way the rabbis and he understands that the rabbis encouraged her to do it. Lo michu is not just a negative, but he even understands what it means. They said it was perfectly all right. They didn't object, and he said, oh, this is perfectly all right.
Spoon feed you, but you know that in the shir I don't spoon feed you. Okay, we're gonna go to the
come up with the answer. But the only way to understand, I'm not, at this point, I know, the question is there. I know nothing more than you do. I suggest that as we go through the sources, okay, a little bit more this week, and the next week, you'll give me the answer. But you have to read the sources. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon lo michel. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon disagree, and they say lo michel, keeping the reshutu, because it's permissible for them, right? Women can do any mitzvah. Umi komakom shelo butzon chachamim. The chachamim weren't happy about it. That is essentially the way the Ran was learned Shad is that Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yossi said, look, we can't stop the women. If they want to do it, they can do it. We're not happy. We're not happy about it because whatever this question is about Gufnaki, it's not true. It's not trivial. The women can overcome it if they're careful, just like the men can do it. But we're not happy. Okay, now, again, I haven't answered your question what this Gufnaki thing is, but, okay.
Yeah, what is this?
No. Okay, let's now, but until now, okay, until now, have we read anybody who says, at least of a lot, that says a woman couldn't wear a tefillin? No. The most you got is they're not happy. Okay. Now we're going to start with the dealing with the Maharam Meruvah. Now you have to understand who the Maharam Meruvah
is.
Yes, Jonathan. The Maharam Meruvah lived, died at the end of the, the Rabbi Burtonberg lived in the end, he died in 1292. He was a very, very unique individual. He was in prison. I think you know the story that he was in prison, that he had his whole life, that the non-Jews realized that Jews were very merciful. And if they could capture a Jew, other Jews would pay their ransom. The Rami Rutberg said, guys, the ladies, enough is enough. If we play into their hands, I'll ransom, they'll take everybody into their ransoms, and then we have to set a rule, because otherwise there's going to be no end to this. And he said that you only ransom an individual for his worth. Now, I don't know how they actually knew what his worth was, but for his worth, and not very much above his worth. Then he was captured. Mm-hmm. And the Jewish community was willing to pay anything that they asked him. Says, you can pay whatever you want. I'm not leaving prison. And he died in prison. Eventually, after he died, they ransomed his body. But he refused. But he was, now, the Rami Burtonberg, it was an incredible individual. He was the outstanding leader of his generation. But wait, what? He's Wittenberg. I think it's German.
The Vamasari?
Wittenberg. Works. In the German, in that area.
It's
Wittenberg. Not Wittenberg. Wittenberg.
It's German.
I said, yeah, I know it's German. Now, but what was special, even more special, about the Rami Wittenberg was that he had five of the greatest comedian of the next generation. Which essentially allowed him to control Pesach. I mean, you have this great scholar, and then he has five scholars who are now the scholars of the generation. It was the Rush, right? The Rush was one of the major, major pillars of codification. The Mordechai, also an outstanding, one of the Tosafists. I go to Maimonides, who wrote a major, major commentary on the Rambam, also major, the Shari Dura, and the Maracha Rizuma. Five outstanding individuals, and essentially what made the Rami Burtonberg have such clout. The closest analogy I can give to you is to try to understand the phenomenon called the Rabbi Yosef. You want to know where Rabbi Yosef has such clout. It's not only that he's an incredible individual, but he has sons who are also incredible individuals who have proceeded to publicize and codify his writings, so that one of the reasons, referring to, you asked why was Moshe Feinstein such a incredible, because he was the Rosh Hashiva of Yeshiva Tiferet Yerushalayim, which is, means he had hundreds of individuals who felt, you know, like their Rebbe. Those type of phenomena, you can say fair or not fair, they're facts. They're facts that people have loyalty to their Rosh Hashiva, to their Rebbe. And clearly in the Maamar of Wittenberg, this played a role. Now, why do I give you this introduction? Because the Maamar of Wittenberg will turn halacha, that's it. Let's read it. Zion. Sucking with another of the Maamar of Wittenberg, Nashim to Rod Mitzvili. The nation is at the Seisha's man karma. Vim Ratsu Lahaniach, if they want to put on tefillin, Ein Shomil Lahen, מפני שאין יודעות לשמור עצמן בנקיות. They don't know how to keep themselves clean. Now, this cleanliness business is getting out of hand. All right? שאין יודעות לשמור עצמן בנקיות, and not only that, the Maharam in Rutenberg is telling me, contrary to everything that came before him, that women can't put on clothes.
He said, no.
That's right.
Yes. When you read about the way God speaks about women, they don't know how to take care of themselves. It doesn't, I mean, if it was an objective criterion, they have something that men don't have, which makes it more difficult, it would be easier to understand. But this whole notion that they're not smart enough to
do it. No, I think that that's not can be true. He's not living in a different generation from the Rashi. Hold on. He's not living in a different generation from the Rajba. The Rajba is his contemporary. And the Rajba says that they, well, they can, obviously. Right? Excuse me, he's not.
I can't understand what it means.
I agree. Right. Okay, I don't think Yodot means cognitive. I don't think Yodot means in a knowledge that they don't know. It means they're not able. They're not able. It doesn't mean they don't know. The woman who goes to the mikveh has to know how to be clean. Right?
Yes.
So what
does that mean?
You're really attention, aren't you?
When was this man?
He died 1290. Let's have a working hypothesis that we're talking about has to do with menstruation. Okay? And so about menstruation, and what he means to say is that he believes that menstrual blood is a problem of cleanliness. Okay? And lo yod'ot means that they have, that's like nothing they can prevent. It's not something they can prevent. It's not something I say, I'll be careful, and then I'll see she's menstruating. Okay? Now, I think that's what he means. And I think as we go through the sources, and they view the problem of menstruation as a cleanliness problem. Now, we're going to have to, now, there's the obvious question. A woman menstruates 5 days. She finishes menstruating. I guess she put it through that. You want to say you have to be careful the days before, the days after, but that is a problem that we're going to have to deal with. Do we say, I mean, I don't have the answer yet, but it seems pretty clear to me, and as we go through the sources, or go through the sources with me, and you'll see, because nobody says that, well, I should say, Chaim David Halevi does say, Chaim David Halevi, in discussing women wearing tefillin, he says that he's referring to menstruation, that the menstrual blood is a cleanliness problem. Because of the bleeding and because of the odor and the like. That's how he wants to argue.
Maybe it means that there are not proper proceedings.
Could be. Essentially what you're suggesting is that perhaps in the modern period we could be more lenient if there's a feminine hygiene. Perhaps. I don't know. I don't know. If the, for instance, if your woman is wearing a tampon and the blood is kept essentially internal, okay, not external to the body, body, it's absorbed into the sanitary napkin, which is very absorbent, and therefore there's no problem. That is a very good question to ask. It's a question that can be raised and has been raised. Okay? But as you're going to see, and you just got to be patient, this question of the issue of the Marl Rav Wurttemberg is going to switch. The problem of the woman, the definition of cleanliness, you'll see the switch as we move into the 1800s. Okay? Just kind of hang in there with
me.
Okay?
He's from the
He died 1292. So he's writing in the middle of the 1200s. I don't deny it. I agree with you. And I would say that as we move into the 1800s, where you're dealing with showers and you're dealing with that the whole cleanliness situation is different. The Poskim can't accept the Marl Rav Wurttemberg on face value. I agree with you, and this is gonna undergo a transformation. But to see the transformation and understand how the Poskim understand, which is not that ending. Otherwise I can finish the shiur in a minute ago. I mean I can 2 minutes. I don't want to do that. I want you to see the source of stuff. That's an obvious question. Let's go through it. You're right. How did Michal Bat Shaul do it? So let me give you a hint. Okay? Michal Bat Shaul didn't have any children. Okay? She never had children. So the post can say, that's one of the hints that it refers to menstruation, and then maybe she never menstruated. What? It doesn't deal with it. What she sees is what she gets. Okay, the Archav Chaim, who was a contemporary of the Maharam of Rutenberg, okay, he was much younger. He was born 1279. I don't know his dates of death, but he knew the Maharam. He was certainly shortly after Maharam of Rutenberg. He says, Kashali al Imam. So I don't understand the Maharam of Rutenberg. As great as he is, I don't understand them. The Micha Bat Shaul hayta manachat velo Micha biyad hachachamim. What do you mean? What do you mean? Micha Bat Shaul did. Varashba matu lehen kol mitzad asay levarech aleha mizeh hamaseh. That's the source for Micha Bat Shaul. The Rashba says, that's how we know the woman can do any mitzad asay shazman grima. Velo Micha biyad hachachamim didn't object. Not only that, ela beretzor hachachamim avda. She did the rabbinic will. She was doing a good thing. See, understand, the Rashba went a step further. So not only there's no reason to object, the rabbis applauded her. And if there was any bit of a problem, how could the Rashba say that she did it with Solomon? If you're objecting. So now the big guess, Rabbi Yosef Kara. We jumped down already. We're now in the 1500s. Okay? Not that nothing else is important, but I'm trying to save some couple of years. Beit Yosef, the Rosh Rabbi Yosef Kara says, the linear, it would seem to me, Shatam Haran, the reason of the Ramaram of Rutenberg, why he decided to turn the halacha on its head, Kamosha Kadav HaTosfot, as the Tosfot writes, the Ita of the Psikta, Shemichu Bachamim, that there is a view of the Psikta. The Psikta is essentially like the Yerushalmi. The rabbis did it, Jim. Uper Shuhem, and they explain the Tama Mishum the Tfilin Sarit Gufnaki, the Nashim Enan's Rizot Lizaher, the women are not careful about being careful about Gufnaki. The Haram Ratzal Lachush Litivepsik. The Ram, he wanted to be stringent like this view, even though we don't pass like the view, but he said that by Tfilin, we should. Okay, now I want you to be notice on. The Marl Rav book said what? Enon yodot lizeher. And he says now, en zlizot lizeher. I want you to realize that is a qualitative good thing. En yodot lizeher means that there's nothing they can do. They demonstrate and en zlizot means they're not careful to be clean, to keep it clean. Even if we learn about it's referring to menstruation, I think what he's saying is they're not careful means they'll put on tefillin even though they're menstruating. Well, they won't be careful. The ends result means They won't. If we allow women to stop putting on tefillin, she says, I put on tefillin every day, I put on tefillin today too. Or she's expecting her parents, she'll take the risk and put on tefillin too. Okay? The result is a different concept, slightly different. Then it means that it really is in her hands, but we're afraid that she won't be careful as she should. Okay. Now, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, Shulchan Aruch, when he brings the particular halacha, simply says, Nashim Turot Mitzvah, because it's a mitzvah of Seisha Azman. That's it. That's what the Yosef Karo, in Shulchan Aruch, when he's going to find the halacha, simply says, women are free from Tzvah, doesn't say over. Now we know he knows about the Maram Rivenberg, because in his commentary, the Beit Yosef, the source of it, that's the same Rabbi Yosef Karo. That's Rabbi Yosef Karo's commentary to the Tours, an earlier book, from which he digested his bottom line. The Tours, the Beit Yosef, is this lengthy encyclopedic discussion of all halacha until the 1500s. And then he took, distilled out the final opinion, and that's a Shulchan Aruch. So in the Rabbi, in his commentary to the Tour, he mentioned the Maram Rivenberg. But in his Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't mention the Maram Rivenberg. He doesn't say that. What would you assume that we have done that? If you ask me, if he was ambivalent, he would say, V'nachon lahak, v'yesh lahak, v'yesh machmir. He doesn't say anything. He simply says, women are not obligated to put out the word tefillin because it's a mitzvah to say shazman. If you're asking me, having studied a lot of Shulchan Aruch, there's a parallel as well. Now, you would automatically say, if that's the case, all the Sephardi Poskim should say there's no problem with the grand book. And trust me, they don't say that. And I don't know, to be honest, I don't understand. I want to check with Babad Yosef, who swears up and down by the Shulchan Aruch. How do they pass him? The Rav Mo, the Moshe Yisrael. What did the Rav Moshe Yisrael? It sounds strange, right? What is? Okay, let's read. Nashim vavadim p'turin mitfilin. That's what I'm Yud, right? Nashim vavadim p'turin mitfilin the nation. It's an asesha zman grama. That is Rav Yosef Karo. Hagah comes from Rav Moshe Yisrael. Ve'im hanashim rotzot lahachmir al atzman mochim biyadam. That's the problem. The problem is that Rav Moshe Yisrael has now taken the Maram Rivenberg and put him in Shulchan Aruch. But notice something else. He doesn't give a reason. He simply says, we object, nothing the other. Simply says, now, we seem to know what his source is, the source of the Maram Rivenberg, but it doesn't means that there might be other reasons to object as well. Okay. Now, I think we better stop here. Okay? I just want you to understand that something has happened here. Okay? I think it's very clear that, and you're gonna see it's a very unique to tefillin. Something has happened here that while the early poskim until about the 1300s had no problem with women wearing tefillin, all of a sudden comes on the Rav Rivenberg. Rav Rivenberg has turned halach on his head. As I try to point out to you, the strength of the Rav Rivenberg was that not only was he a giant, but he had these five Talmidim who also were giants, and that promulgated till it got into the Rambam.
He also
had the Yerushalmi. Well, the Yerushalmi, we don't pass the Yerushalmi. Now, this battle about what are you going to do with the Gemara? Where does it come from? This problem is going to come up again, and we'll deal with it more next week. And I think that as we move into the 1800s, into the late 1800s, you will see a development to an explanation of the Maram Rivenberg, which I find much more satisfying, which we can deal with a little bit better. But we'll continue next week. I also have to ask, what about exceptional women? Is it possible that some women who are exceptional can do it? If it's menstruation, can women who are stop menstruating? Right? Can they wear put on tefillin? Because there's And is it, I mean,